A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about the math hiding inside his pill bottle again. He sent in a whole thing about pharmacokinetics. Specifically, two concepts he thinks are worth knowing, even if you've never set foot in a med school lecture hall. The first is steady state, that loading phase where a drug builds up to its target concentration, and the counterintuitive fact that taking something every 24 hours doesn't mean it piles up in your body forever. He wants to understand how that accumulation is actually avoided when your ingestion seems to be outpacing your body's ability to clear the drug. The second is the flip side of that coin. How clinicians actually build taper schedules for sleep medications, especially when rebound insomnia is a known risk, and how understanding half-life and clearance math can help a patient make sense of their own taper.
These are exactly the right questions to be asking. And they're connected in a way that most people never get taught. The same math governs both getting onto a drug and getting off it. The loading phase and the taper are mirror images of each other.
So today we're opening up the pharmacokinetics textbook to the chapters that matter most to anyone who's ever stared at a prescription bottle and wondered what's actually happening inside their body. Let's start with the fundamental thing Daniel raised. What actually is steady state? And why doesn't the drug just pile up forever?
The short answer is that your body isn't a bucket. It's a bucket with a drain. And the drain gets faster the more water you pour in.
That's the bathtub analogy, right?
That's the one. Imagine a bathtub with the tap running and the drain open. The water level at any moment depends on two things: how fast water is coming in and how fast it's going out. If you set the tap to a trickle and the drain is wide open, the tub never fills. If you crank the tap wide open, the water level rises, but only until the outflow pressure catches up. A taller column of water pushes more water through the drain per second. That's first-order kinetics in a nutshell. The elimination rate is proportional to the concentration.
So the drain isn't fixed. It speeds up as the tub fills.
And that's the answer to Daniel's question about why accumulation doesn't go to infinity. If you take a drug with a 24-hour half-life once a day, the first dose peaks at some concentration, then drops by half over the next day. You take the second dose, now you're starting from 50% of the first peak, so the new peak is higher, but not twice as high because you're also clearing more drug per hour at that higher concentration. The system is self-limiting.
Walk me through the actual numbers on that. If half-life is 24 hours and you're dosing once daily, what's the accumulation factor?
It converges on about 2. After the first dose, your peak is whatever it is, call it 1 unit. After the second dose, you've still got half a unit left from yesterday, so your new peak is about 1.5. Third dose, you've got a bit more residual. Peak hits about 1.75. Fourth dose, 1.875. It's approaching 2, but never quite reaching it. In practice, steady state is considered reached after 4 to 5 half-lives, at which point you're at about 94 to 97% of the theoretical maximum.
And that's true regardless of the dose size.
Completely independent. Whether you're taking 10 milligrams or 100, the time to steady state is purely a function of the half-life. The dose determines the absolute concentration at steady state, the height of the water in the tub, but the half-life determines how long it takes to get there. 4 to 5 half lives, always. This trips people up constantly. They think a higher dose means faster accumulation. It doesn't. It means a higher final level reached on the same schedule.
So for Daniel's sleep medication, let's say Zolpidem. Half-life, about 2.5 hours. Steady state is reached in
about 10 to 12 hours, basically overnight. By the second or third night of taking it, you're at steady state. Compare that to something like diazepam with a half-life that can run 100 hours or more. You're looking at 20 days before you're truly at steady state. That's why benzodiazepines with long half-lives can sneak up on people. They feel fine for the first week. Then, week 3 hits and they're wondering why they're so sedated.
So the bathtub analogy gives us the inflow and the drain. But there's another piece here that Daniel alluded to. The therapeutic window. Too low and the drug doesn't work. Too high and it's toxic. Steady state is the equilibrium that keeps you inside that window.
Right. And the reason clinicians care about reaching steady state quickly for some drugs is that the therapeutic window can be narrow. If you need a certain concentration in the blood to stop seizures, you don't want to wait 5 half-lives, which for some anticonvulsants could be days. That's where loading doses come in. You give a big first dose to jump the concentration up to the target immediately, then switch to a maintenance dose that keeps it there.
Which is the inverse of tapering, in a way. Loading is a sprint to steady state. Tapering is a staircase back down.
That's exactly the connection. And it's where we should go next, because the tapering question is the one that actually matters for someone holding a prescription bottle and wondering how to get off it safely.
So that's how you get into steady state. But what about getting out? Daniel's trying to taper off a sleep medication, and rebound insomnia is the thing he's worried about. Let's talk about how clinicians actually design those step-down schedules.
The first thing to understand is that tapering isn't just the reverse of loading. When you're loading, the body is a passive participant. It's just clearing drug at whatever rate the concentration dictates. When you're tapering, the body has adapted. It's changed its own baseline. For sleep medications, what's happened is your brain has downregulated its own sleep initiation machinery because it's been getting a chemical assist every night. Remove that assist suddenly, and the brain can't pick up the slack immediately.
That's the rebound insomnia. It's not just the original insomnia coming back, it's worse.
Often significantly worse. The receptors that the drug was tickling have become less sensitive, or there are fewer of them. The brain's natural sleep drive has been partially replaced by the drug. Pull the drug, and there's a gap before the brain upregulates those receptors again. That gap is withdrawal, and for sleep medications, withdrawal feels like staring at the ceiling at 3 in the morning wondering if you'll ever sleep again.
So the taper is buying time for the brain to adapt.
That's the entire game. Each step down in dose forces the brain to upregulate its own sleep mechanisms a little bit. You drop the dose, the brain scrambles for a few days, then finds a new equilibrium. Then you drop again. The staircase metaphor you used earlier is perfect. Each step is a new, lower, steady state.
And the spacing of those steps matters as much as the size.
It matters enormously. The rule of thumb is that you should wait at least 1 to 2 half-lives between dose reductions to let the new steady state establish itself. For a drug with a 2.5-hour half-life like Zolpidem, that means you could theoretically reduce every 12 hours or so. In practice, clinicians usually go slower, every 3 to 4 days, because the subjective experience of withdrawal doesn't perfectly track the plasma concentration. The brain's adaptation lags behind the blood levels.
Let's make this concrete. Someone's on 10 milligrams of Zolpidem at bedtime. What does a reasonable taper look like?
A typical approach would be to drop by 2.5 milligrams, a quarter of the dose, every 3 to 4 days. So 10 to 7.5, hold for 3 or 4 nights, then 5, hold, then 2.5, hold, then off. The whole thing takes about 2 weeks. The highest risk for rebound insomnia is the first 1 or 2 nights after each reduction, because that's when the gap between what the brain expects and what it's getting is largest.
And here's the thing Daniel's prompt made me think about. That's a fixed dose reduction, 2.5 milligrams each time, which means the percentage reduction gets bigger as you go.
This is the dirty secret of most taper schedules. A 2.5 milligram drop from 10 is 25%. From 5, it's 50%. From 2.5 to 0 is 100% reduction. The final step is always the hardest, because it's proportionally the largest shock to the system. A lot of clinicians don't think about this. They write reduce by 5 milligrams per week and don't notice that the last 5 milligram drop is a cliff.
Which is why some people sail through the first few steps of a taper and then hit a wall at the end.
And the smarter approach, which is more common in academic centers and addiction medicine than in general practice, is percentage-based tapering. Reduce by 10 to 25% of the current dose at each step. That keeps the relative shock roughly constant. The absolute reduction gets smaller as you go, which is exactly what you want. The last step from a tiny dose to zero is still proportionally large, but the absolute amount is small enough that the brain can usually handle it.
Now compare that to a longer half-life drug. Daniel mentioned clonazepam as a point of comparison. Half-life around 30 to 40 hours.
Completely different tapering problem. With clonazepam, steady state after each dose change takes about a week, so you can't reduce every few days. The drug hasn't even finished adjusting to the last reduction yet. A typical clonazepam taper might drop by a quarter of a milligram every 2 weeks. For someone on 1 milligram, that's 4 steps over 2 months. The advantage is that the long half-life smooths out the transitions. You don't get the sharp peaks and troughs that make short half-life drugs so tricky to taper.
Which brings us to the counterintuitive thing. Most people assume short half-life drugs are easier to quit because they leave your system faster.
And that's exactly backwards for tapering. A short half-life means the drug is gone quickly, which sounds good, but it also means you get inter-dose withdrawal between each reduction if you're not dosing frequently enough. Someone tapering off a short half-life Z drug might need to take it multiple times a day during the taper just to avoid bouncing between withdrawal and redosing. A long half-life drug essentially tapers itself. It leaves so slowly that the brain has time to adapt without the sharp discontinuities.
That's the fluoxetine principle, the self-tapering antidepressant.
Same logic. Fluoxetine's active metabolite has a half-life of about a week. When you stop taking it, it takes over a month to clear completely. Most people don't need a formal taper. The drug does it for them. Zolpidem, with its 2.5-hour half-life, is the opposite. It's gone by morning, and your brain notices immediately.
So, for Daniel's situation, tapering off a sleep medication with a short half-life, the practical insight is that he should expect the hardest nights to be the first 1 or 2 after each dose reduction, and the final step to 0 is going to be proportionally the biggest jolt.
And knowing that's useful. If you understand that the misery of night 3 after a reduction is a predictable pharmacokinetic event, your plasma concentration has dropped, your brain is scrambling, and this is exactly what the math predicts. It's easier to write it out. You're not backsliding, you're not failing. You're experiencing the expected consequence of a 25% drop in the drug your brain has come to rely on.
The math doesn't make it hurt less, but it makes it less frightening.
There's another practical point here about fixed dose versus percentage-based reductions that I want to underline. If you're working with a doctor who writes reduce by 5 milligrams every week, and you're down to your last 10 milligrams, that next step is a 50% reduction. A patient who knows the math can have that conversation. Hey, this step is proportionally much bigger than the earlier ones. Can we do 2.5 instead? Most reasonable clinicians will adjust if you can articulate why.
It's the difference between following a recipe and understanding the chemistry.
Most patients are handed the recipe without the chemistry. They're told, take half a pill for a week, then stop, with no explanation of why that particular schedule was chosen or what to expect. The steady state framework gives you a mental model for what's happening. Each dose reduction is a step down to a new steady state. The time to reach that new steady state is 4 to 5 half. The withdrawal symptoms peak somewhere in the first 1 to 2 half-lives after the reduction. That's the whole playbook.
Let's talk about what happens when the math meets the real world. Because all of this assumes the patient is a perfect pharmacokinetic system. Consistent absorption, predictable clearance, no confounding factors.
Real patients are messy. Liver function varies. Age matters. Clearance drops as we get older, so half-life extends. Someone who's 65 might have a functionally longer half-life for zolpidem than the textbook 2.5 hours. Genetic polymorphisms in liver enzymes can make someone a slow or fast metabolizer. Alcohol use, other medications, even grapefruit juice, all of it shifts the clearance rate.
Which means the textbook taper schedule might be too fast or too slow for a given individual.
The only way to know is to pay attention to symptoms. If you're tapering and the withdrawal is brutal, you're going too fast. The brain isn't keeping up with the plasma concentration drops. Slow down, make smaller steps, hold longer at each level. If you're sailing through with no symptoms at all, you might be able to accelerate. The math gives you a starting point, but the patient's experience is the real guide.
The optimal taper is a negotiation between the pharmacokinetics and the subjective experience.
It's why the question of what's the optimal number of steps doesn't have a single answer. Too few steps and the withdrawal is harsh, which increases the risk that the patient gives up and goes back to the original dose. Too many steps and the taper drags on forever, the patient loses motivation, and they might abandon the process out of sheer exhaustion.
Is there a mathematical sweet spot?
There's been some modeling work on this, mostly in the context of opioid and benzodiazepine tapers. The general finding is that reducing by 10 to 25% of the previous dose every 1 to 2 half lives minimizes the peak withdrawal severity while keeping the total taper duration reasonable. For a short half-life drug, that might mean a 2 to 4 week taper. For a long half-life drug, it could be months.
The percentage approach automatically handles the endgame problem. The reductions get smaller in absolute terms as you approach zero.
Which is exactly what you want. The last step from a tiny dose to nothing is still 100% reduction, but 100% of almost nothing is almost nothing. The brain barely notices.
Unless the clinician wrote a fixed dose schedule and the last step is 5 milligrams to zero.
Then the brain notices. And that's how you get patients who successfully tapered down to a low dose, tried to stop completely, and ended up back on the full dose within a week. The final cliff was too steep.
All this elegant math assumes the real world cooperates. Hilbert, you've seen this from the other side of the counter. What's the messiest taper you ever witnessed?
1994. Hospital outpatient pharmacy. I was counting pills into bottles, mostly. A doctor wrote a discharge prescription for clonazepam taper. The patient was on 1 milligram. The order said 0.5 milligram for a week, then stop.
That's a 50% reduction followed by 100% reduction.
The pharmacist on duty caught it. She looked at the order, looked at me, and said, "This patient is going to be back here in 3 days in full withdrawal." She called the doctor. He didn't pick up. She did the math on a napkin, 0.25 milligram drops every 2 weeks, with a final 2 weeks at 0.25 milligram before stopping. Added 8 weeks to the taper.
The doctor went along with it?
He called back an hour later, annoyed. She read him the half-life of his own prescription and asked if he wanted the patient seizing in the parking lot. He signed off on the new schedule.
A napkin?
I still have it. It's in a box somewhere. First time I understood that the numbers on the prescription pad and the numbers in a human body are two completely different things. The pad said 1 week. The body needed 2 months.
The napkin math is what actually gets people off these drugs safely. Not the standard order set, not the template in the electronic health record. Someone who understands the kinetics and does the arithmetic by hand.
The pharmacist also told me that the last step is always the one that breaks people. She said if you're going to err on the side of making the last step too small rather than too big. A week of 0.25 milligram is cheap insurance against a week of no sleep and a panicked phone call.
Which connects back to what we were saying about percentage-based reductions. The final step should be the smallest in absolute terms.
The napkin had coffee rings on it by the time she was done. But the math was right.
Of course you kept the napkin.
It's in a box. I know which box.
The thing about that story is that it captures the gap between the elegant pharmacokinetic model and the actual clinical workflow. The model says, reduce by X percent every Y days. The real world has doctors who don't know the half-life of what they're prescribing, pharmacists who do the math on napkins, and patients who show up in withdrawal because nobody explained what was going to happen.
That gap is exactly why Daniel's question matters. Understanding the math yourself means you're not entirely dependent on someone else catching the error.
The open question I'm left with is whether we're going to see personalized taper algorithms become standard. Your individual clearance rate depends on your age, your liver enzymes, your genetics, all things we can measure or estimate. A taper schedule that's optimized for your specific pharmacokinetic profile could be safer and more comfortable than the one-size-fits-all approach.
Some of the digital health startups are already working on this. Pharmacokinetic modeling is a service, essentially. You input the drug, your demographics, maybe a genetic panel if you have one, and it spits out a personalized taper schedule.
The math exists. The challenge is getting clinicians to use it instead of the default. Reduce by 5 milligrams a week. That's been handed down since the 1970s.
If you've got a weird prompt about the math hiding inside your medicine cabinet, send it to show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll read it, research it, and maybe Hilbert will dig up another napkin.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.